The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Investors should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of investment company products carefully before investing. The prospectus contains this and other information about the investment company. Prospectuses may be obtained from your advisor and should be read in full. All guarantees are backed by the claims-paying ability of the issuing insurer. Withdrawals and death benefits are subject to income tax. If withdrawals and other distributions are received prior to age 59 and a half, a 10% penalty may apply. Shares when redeemed may be worth more or less than the original cost.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show, a live podcast edition, as we are broadcasting live here Monday, April 9th at about 3:45 p.m. Mountain Time. So we do have a few listeners out there live. So if you're interested in calling into the show live, I'll give you the phone number right now, 970-530-0556, if you have a question for us. If you don't have a question for us, that's fine. We have some email questions to go through, but If you're overcome by the feeling of reaching out to us and live and would like to talk to us on the phone while we're on the show here, 970-530-0556. So on today's show, we've got, assuming we don't have any calls, if we get calls, we'll have random topics we can't predict. But in the meantime, we have a follow-up, I know, to kind of a lengthy email question with several tax issues involved that we had talked about couple of weeks ago, actually.
Was it just last week?
It was just last week on the Colorado show. We didn't do it on the...
Remember, we added it on? Got it.
So okay. When we do that, listeners, and I want to welcome, this is Jim, and seated to my left is no one, but to my right is Chris. No?
Wilma. Whoa.
Justin.
Hello.
Well, actually, you are to my left.
Kind of.
Yeah. You're kind of.
If you go around the circle, if you go around the oval, that is
go around the oval. Yeah. But Justin is here to my right, and this is the Retirement and IRA Show. We want to thank everyone for coming. But well, yes, we do have
brain freeze.
I got a lot going on here. We do have a follow up to the tax question that was added to the end of last week's show. We put the Colorado show. What I did was this. I worried that the compliance would take forever to get the shows approved, and then we don't know how long they take to actually get on iTunes. And this tax question had 2 weeks to get it done, April 17th, next week, next Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So by making it the Colorado show, that's a live broadcast. So I told him, you can't see it or hear it on iTunes. That has to go through compliance. But it plays the first time streaming live. You can hear it.
Got it.
So
you told them to listen.
I told
Saturday
them to
morning
listen
at 8.
Live, 8 o'clock, and I Got sent it. Them to 1310kfka.com, mm-hmm. and I said, click the listen live button. And her and her husband listened at 8 o'clock. They turned out to be from Illinois. So they listened whatever the time difference is.
9 o'clock, their time.
And listened to the entire show and then sent us a very nice, very long email.
Holy cow.
Adding a little bit. So I'm going to let you guys know some of the things they said.
Okay.
But apparently I answer helped them a bit, but added clarity. A lot of the assumptions we made, spot on. So
but some probably not.
We just kind of guessed well, and that's what happened there. So that's why we're talking this week about something that played last week, but I don't even know if it's really on iTunes yet. I don't think the show is actually on
by
iTunes.
By the time people are listening to this, they will have heard that from the week before.
They're not
they
hearing
post
this
in order.
Yeah, but I think only March 31st is up right now.
Oh, you're talking about people listening live.
Yes.
People listening live won't know what we're talking
about. Well, two of them won't know what we're talking about.
There could be many, many. I don't have a count for you, but there might be thousands.
I doubt it. No. But I also want to welcome, today is our first official podcast on Google Play.
What? Nice. I didn't know that they...
They have their own separate deal, apparently.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, apparently neither did we. Did you ever wonder why out of our 8,500 listeners, 90% of them were on iTunes?
I can listen to it on... I use Podcast Addict. Mm-hmm.
But that's what we were talking about on the Colorado show earlier.
Where were you, Justin? We already talked about that.
If you have an app on your Android, because I know you use the Android.
Right.
If you have an app on the Android, the apps can go to iTunes. But somehow we have to be on Google Play to be prominently featured on Google's podcasting stuff. So anyways, I want to welcome our Androidians. Anybody on Google Play, we call you Androidians because you have the Android platform. Anyone who is listening on Apple, we affectionately refer to you as iTunians. And both of you combined are podcastians. These are all my words, and someday they're going to be in the dictionary.
Is this the first week that will actually be up on it?
On Google Play.
Or I can search right now and find it on Google Play.
No, because I don't think she's actually put a show on Google Play. You actually had to be approved. Actually, no, there is a show. She had to submit a show that they listened to, and they apparently liked it.
Someone listened to it?
Yeah.
And they approved it?
Yeah.
Wow. I guess they have lax standards at Google.
Well, Google's all about free speech, for crying out loud. Hopefully they're going to approve it.
But anyway, so we're on Google Play, so welcome Androidians.
It's very exciting.
And you got a lot of catching up to do because we have about 8,000 iTunians who listen to us. So.
And we've done about 8,000 shows before now.
So. Yeah, we've been on, we've been on Northern Colorado Radio for over a decade. And I think we've been on iTunes for, 6 years now?
Sounds about right.
Okay.
We were there day one, I think, of iTunes.
Were we?
No, I'm just saying that.
Okay. So, I would say to you still trying to find it? Did you find it?
No. Yeah, no, I have no idea where you're going to find this. You can only search games, movies, TV, books, newsstand, and if I do a random search across the board, nothing popped up.
Oh, the email we got from Google said it might take a while before you appear in search.
Oh, there you go.
And you figure Google would be able to do it right away.
I just never saw a podcast on Google. It was really.
I think they're trying to expand.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll figure it out. We might be the first people on Google Play.
Well, I don't know about that.
I have no idea, but I did get a congratulatory email Sunday afternoon from Google.
All right.
And then I forwarded it to Julia and deleted it. Okay. So if you remember last week, we answered a very lengthy tax question from a woman who had just turned 70, and she was faced with a $9,000 tax bill. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I do.
And do you remember it, Chris?
Yes. Perfect. And she was looking for ways to
reduce the $9,000
because it was shocking and substantial, and they wish they didn't have to pay it.
So if any of our iTunians and Androidians have not heard that show yet, I would go back and listen to that show in particular. That show would have been last week. So what is that, April 1st? Wasn't that it, Chris? Your birthday, April 1st? Is that the...
That was a Sunday, so...
Okay, so then it would have been the 31st. Mm-hmm. Okay, that would have been our last show of
March.
Not
to derail you, but we do show up. All the podcasts are in Google Play Music app, not in the Play Store app.
So oh, I got to go to the
music. You got to go to Play Music.
Play Music.
And it's right on in there. And,
and are we there?
But isn't many,
oh, it, my gosh, there's a whole ton of them. She must have submitted.
All of them?
Must have been, because there's dozens and dozens.
So it's a separate app? It's a completely separate app?
Play,
it's
Google not, Play Music, yes.
Yeah, well, completely I go into Google different. Play, and then I just go into the music category. That's not appropriate?
No, it's totally inappropriate.
Oh.
I have no idea what you two are talking about.
Yeah.
Because on Apple phone, I just open up the podcast app, type in Retirement IRA Show, and there it is.
Mm-hmm. Google Play Movies and TV.
Okay, can we skip this?
This wasn't meant, I said, don't, not to derail us. Okay.
You know me, you get me going down a rabbit hole.
Got it, got it.
But anyways, we're on Google Play now, so I want to welcome our Androidians. Okay, so listen to this show. It was the March 31st show. Get to the end of the show when Chris and I say, and if you continue listening, we're going to repost the Colorado show, kind of as a little service. It's on the Colorado show. And the reason it's on the Colorado show again, even though it was an Illinois listener, not a Colorado listener, is I wanted her to be able to stream it live to give her a week to do planning. And as luck would have it, her planning is going to be one of the things we said she might want to consider. She's going to file an extension to get her ducks in a row.
Right, yeah.
Good move.
So she's going to file an extension. She's going to get her ducks in a row. She can do the IRA contribution for one more year, as you know, because mm-hmm. as long as she gets the money in before April 17th, and she's going to do that. She's going to file for an extension and fund her IRA before April 17th as a 2017 contribution when she was 69 years old.
Perfect.
She recently turned 70. One of her questions to me, and we'll answer it right here, right now, she was wondering, can she do both? Put money in her traditional IRA and the Roth IRA. Answer to that is yes, but only up to the same amount, $6,500. So if she put $6,500 in the traditional IRA to get a little bit of a tax deduction to reduce her tax liability, she can't put diddly squat, big fat zero, into the Roth. If she puts half in the traditional, she could put half in the Roth. So you can't do both full contributions, but the government or the IRS doesn't discern between a Roth and a traditional as far as that $6,500 that she can put in goes.
She could do the 2017 contribution into one, and is she eligible for a 2018? When does she turn...
Well, anybody of any age, and that was what she then said she intended to do. Her husband, by the way, we thought was self-employed.
And we nailed it?
No.
Oh.
What's his story?
He,
that was a big assumption.
Yeah, well, he works for, if I understand her email correctly.
There was some kind of consulting income for which he didn't have any income tax withheld.
Wrote, my husband will no longer be working full-time. So our income from his work will drop. And then she wrote, I have no idea about consulting. So I interpreted that as he was working for a company. Because we kept thinking he was a consultant or something with self-employed income.
There was a contractor with no taxes withheld.
Yeah, that was
no
that.
Employer that you're working for can get away with paying you without holding.
Maybe he's an independent contractor, so he still has to have his own business.
So he's self-employed. Yeah.
Right. So there might be a little confusion here in translation. So our whole thought of him opening and funding a SEP with self-employment income, she never mentioned in her follow-up email explaining things. So I'm not quite sure. If you're listening, and now that you filed an extension, you have time because the SEP IRA can be opened by your husband up to the tax filing deadline. And if she filed for an extension, she is going to pay the $9,000 in taxes now that she owes. She knows she'll get some of that back. She's just trying to get her ducks in a row here. If your husband is truly employed by an employer, Chris has a good point, and it made me scratch my head too. I don't know how he could have had no taxes withheld.
Yeah, it's a tough one. And I'm assuming, you know, a good way to probably find out is, did he get a W-2 or a 1099? Right?
That's how you'd know.
Yeah,
sure. I should have asked
but
for
no
that.
But no taxes withheld.
Yeah.
Unless you're a high school student and you're making so little that you're technically exempt, which I don't think applies to him.
Right. Were there Social Security taxes withheld? Was there unemployment taxes withheld? If that's the case, then he's definitely wages. But if he's getting a 1099 with nothing being withheld, then he could probably file, you know, a Schedule C and be self-employed.
Yeah.
Then she went on to say what they intend to do, because he's going to be working but no longer working full time. They are going to begin withholding taxes from their Social Security. She thought Social Security was tax-free because they didn't take taxes out of it.
Mm-mm.
So now that she listened to us now, and she was never a regular listener. She found us by Googling for help. And Jim helps and help with my Social Security. It all popped up.
And she stumbled across us.
She stumbled across us. So she's going to start listening to our podcast now, too.
Oh, so she has a lot of time on her hands.
Some good SEO optimization you have going there, Jim. Yeah.
So what she was a little confused on, and if you were a longtime listener to our, well, I don't want to call her by her name, Georgette.
Georgette.
If you were a longtime listener, Georgette, you would have learned that Social Security is not tax-free. Up to 85% of it might be subject to income taxes. So she just had made some basic mistakes, and they're getting things in order. But the one thing, listener, if your husband is truly an employee of a company and gets a W-2, right? That's what he would get if he's an employee.
Yep.
Then I don't know why taxes were never withheld from his salary. And you may want to find out if Social Security has been withheld and other things. I mean, yeah. I don't know.
Maybe just federal income taxes were not withheld and he opted out on his W-4 under some sort of...
Well, you can also play those games where you exaggerate your number of exemptions so that your withholding becomes practically zero. Or I've never seen
my gut is still zero, saying, though, because she calls it, of course you are correct, that all this untaxed income, and she writes, our Social Security, consulting fees, had a tab that needs to be paid. Consulting fees.
Self-employed.
I'm thinking he's self-employed.
Yeah.
So if he is self-employed, listener, in other words, a 1099, right, Justin?
If you're filing a Schedule C on your taxes, then you're self-employed. Okay, that's the way you need to look at it. Even if all your income is coming from one large, quote-unquote, employer, and you technically only work for them, but you're under a contract with them rather than as a wage employee, you're still self-employed.
Yep. So if that is the case and your husband is self-employed, please, like we suggested, talk to your tax professional. Well, I would assume you probably don't have a tax professional, actually. Get a tax professional and have them figure out how much your husband would be allowed to put into a SEP IRA, even though he is over the age of 70. He will be able to contribute to a SEP IRA. He will not be exempt from required minimum distributions, but you only have to take out 3.7% as your first year's RMD, thereabouts. It might be a little more, a little less for him. That's an approximation. But if he could put another $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 in, yes, it would increase his RMD next year, but only by about 3.7% of what he put in. But it would give you a much bigger tax deduction on your taxes. You have until your tax filing deadline, including extensions, to get the SEP open and funded. So it gives you a little bit more time. You might be able to lower your tax burden even more than our first suggestion, which is a spousal IRA, which is essentially what you're opening, listener, a spousal IRA. Your husband cannot put money into a traditional IRA because he is already over the age of 70. And even though you, listener, are over the age of 70, you are making the contribution for last year, 2017, when you were not over the age of 69. You were 69 last year, so you weren't 70. Anybody can put money into an IRA so long as they're under the age of 70. Once you reach 70, you cannot put money into a traditional IRA, but you can put money into a SEP IRA. It will not exempt you from RMDs on that contribution, but the RMDs are going to be a lot lower than the money you put in. You don't have to take it all back out. And you will get a income tax deduction based on the amount of contribution you put into the SEP IRA. Not an income tax deduction. That's a bad way of putting it. It's going to lower your taxable earnings from his consulting business, thereby lowering your taxes overall. Do you want to add anything?
Yeah, I think a big thing is just watch out, because even though you're going to be funding a SEP, you're going to be taking money out the next year for RMDs, like you mentioned. So just be aware of that. Make sure you're factoring that in when you're doing your RMD calculations. And if there is self-employment, if it does turn out that that is real, then you know any deduction that you do or reduction in income through SEP contributions will also reduce your self-employment tax.
And one caveat I want to throw out there, one of those little-known gotchas. If he goes ahead, he being your hubby, if he goes ahead and opens up a SEP, he is making a 2017 contribution. He will be subject to an RMD this year based on that, because your 2018 RMD is based on your December 31st, 2017 contribution. 2017 December 31st value. If you read the actual law, it says you have to add in any outstanding rollovers and any previous year's contributions. So let's just say he doesn't have a SEP yet, because she would have mentioned it to us, but he puts in $30,000. I'm just making that up. I have no idea if that's what they could or couldn't put in. But let's just say he's eligible to put in $30,000. He puts it in 2018, but it counts as a what, Chris? 2017 contribution. Mm-hmm. So when he does his 2018 RMDs, he will have to consider that $30,000 as part of his 2018 RMD.
So you're going to put money in this year and take out the RMD this year.
Based for last year.
Yep.
So it gets a little confusing. She did say she's thinking of hiring a financial planner in her home state of Illinois. Good idea. You can also work with firms such as ourselves, who work with people throughout the United States, if you don't mind counseling with people over the internet. But if you want somebody straight across from you, I would go ahead and hire a financial planner. I thought that was a good idea she had. But I would go one step further. You need a tax planner. You need someone to either help you with taxes or at least hire a financial planner with a tax background. You can find them. They're called CPAs, Certified Public Accounting, and they might have a designation afterwards /PFS, Personal Financial Specialist. That's kind of a CPA who specializes in financial planning. You need both. You need a retirement plan and planner, and you're going to need tax planning and planning. Planner. So you can look for
plan.
That's plan a lot, yes.
You can find a CPA /PFS. You can look for an EA. Justin here to my right is studying to be an EA. That's an enrolled agent. That is a designation by the IRS for someone who's enrolled to represent people in front of the IRS, but they're taught all about personal tax preparation as well as some business taxation issues. You might see an EA /CFP, Certified Financial Planner. That would be a good designation to look for. In our practice, we have a wannabe EA who's not quite there yet, but he's trying and will be someday, I have no doubt. And then CFPs here on staff. So it's not one person. We have multiple people on staff, some CFPs, some EA. But if you do interview a financial planner there in Illinois, you need tax help as well. So I just want to encourage you to look for someone who's going to be able to help you on the tax side as well as the financial planning side and retirement planning side. And again, she had another question. Can she put money in a Roth IRA? Yes. Can she do both at the same time? Yes, but not in excess of the $6,500 that you're going to be allowed to put in. Going forward, she was wondering, can she put money into a Roth? Absolutely, if your husband still has earned income. And we're a little sketchy on what it is your husband's doing. But apparently it's some sort of consulting. He may be an employee or he may be self-employed. We don't know. Either way, because you're married, you will be able to, and he will be able to, fund a Roth IRA. Even though you are both too old to put money in a traditional IRA, you are not too old to put money into a Roth IRA. But you need earnings. You need earned income. The minute he stops working and has no more earnings, even if he's drawing Social Security and a pension and other things, that doesn't matter. It has to be earned income. If that ends, your ability to contribute to a Roth ends. But as long as it's happening, him working, you, listener, will be able to put money into a Roth as a spouse to someone who has a job. It's called a spousal IRA. And then your husband will be able to put money in, mainly because he's the earner, and he'll be allowed to put up to $6,500 in as well. All combined, if he's going to earn at least $13,000, you could put $13,000 in a Roth, half in yours, half in his. So Roths can take money up to any age. IRAs, you can't put money in after age 70. All right, anything else either of you want to opine on with that tax case? I just thought you would probably want to know about the follow-up.
I have nothing, no. I think that pretty well covers it.
I'm glad we could help her a little bit, and I'm glad she's going to seek some professional advice on this because just a little bit of advice in this area should be able to pay for itself easily in tax savings. And
need someone who's going to know the rules here. Okay, the next thing I want to chat about. Excuse me. Next thing I want to chat about also came from the March 31st show, but not the Colorado version. I think you, Chris, Justin, mm-hmm. only were on for the tax part. You didn't do the actual.
It's tax season. I had to leave immediately.
Yeah, you left. Yeah. So you haven't seen this part. Chris, you were on. You're not paying attention. You're looking at your phone.
I am.
You still on Google Play?
No, I'm on Twitter.
On that note, I did find it on Google Play.
In the Play Store?
Yeah, you got to go to the actual music app for Google.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah, but not the actual Play Store, because the Play Store is where you get all your apps. Yeah, right. So
Play Music.
Play Music. Yeah, yep. So you got to clarify that.
Yep, we're on Google Play Music.
Yeah, you got to go
to the podcast.
Google Music. Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're on Google Play Music,
mm-hmm. and I scrolled, and there was tons of shows on there.
Yep.
Cool.
All the way up to the March 31st show.
Wow. Okay, so we got an email on the March 31st show. I'm not going to mention from who. You'll know this person, Justin, but a longtime listener. So we, as always, are going to protect his anonymity. And why do you laugh
well
every time I
done.
Say that?
Well done.
I'm
you,
nailing
you sounded it.
It
out very well.
Anonymity.
Yeah.
And we're going to do that by calling him George.
Just what I always wanted, my own little bunny rabbit. I will name him George, and I will hug him and pet him and squeeze him.
I'm not a bunny rabbit.
Before we get into this, Justin, you'll appreciate this. You'll giggle over this because I actually got a smile out of Chris. So you know how I'm going to, darn it, where is it?
Chicago.
I know where
it's
I'm going.
It's in Illinois.
I know where it
you
is.
You said, where is it?
No, but where's the email with the name of that restaurant? Remember the restaurant I told you mm-hmm. about?
I did.
How could something be in my email 1 minute and then it's not here the next?
Are you looking at the right?
You don't remember the name of the restaurant?
No, do you?
Yes.
You're kidding me. You know it?
Because you told me just 15 minutes ago or whatever.
I'm totally clueless on what it is.
He's very good at names. Yeah.
No, I'm not good at names. Right. If you haven't noticed, I am not good at names.
Or sarcasm, right?
But what I don't know is how can I have been reading an email to you, Chris, mm-hmm. and now the email is literally not in my inbox? Did I hit delete by mistake?
That's my guess.
Nope, says nothing in my delete. Well, this.
So, what's the name of the restaurant, Chris?
No, you can't. Let me play it in, and then you can.
Well, let me describe. It's the oldest Italian steakhouse in Chicago.
Oh. You know how I want to go to a place in Chicago where Al Capone might have eaten?
Right, right.
I'm going to look at it. They have photos since 1941.
Well, when did Capone? No, Capone was in jail. Damn it! So he wouldn't have been in there.
Maybe all. The, so all of Capone's hideouts, at least steakhouses, have gone under. Apparently.
Oh, so there ain't no reason.
Chicago's finest steakhouse since 1941. We welcome you to over 75 years of tradition.
Yeah,
and
I think
not
they,
hosting Al Capone.
They sent him to prison somewhere in the 30s.
I think you missed it. Yeah, it looks good from the pictures.
All right. Well, the when you hear the name of the restaurant, what is it, Chris?
Gene and Giorgetti's.
Gene and Giorgetti's. Yeah. Okay, I like it.
So, Gene and Giorgetti, Chicago's finest.
We were thinking of using Gene and Giorgetti.
With two fine locations, right. One in Chicago and one in Rosemont.
Oh, there you go. So that's the new name?
Rosemont, isn't that the... That used to be where Capone hung out the most. That was where...
Rosemont, Illinois?
Yeah, he left Chicago and hung out in Rosemont.
Maybe at Gene and Giorgetti's, but not...
Not the one in Chicago, though. I'm going to have to go to the Rosemont place. But anyways, that email, that really ticks me off, that emails. So for those of you who send me emails and then I lose them, you know I'm not making this up because I cannot find that email.
I'm sure you're not making it up, but it's a little sad all at the same time.
What's sad?
That you can't handle email in the year 2018.
I don't get. That's why this is printed. See this? It's printed.
Mm-hmm.
I can't lose it.
Lose that.
Well, I can still lose it, which
so
I have
born
in the past.
Born in a small Tuscan town of Lucca, could be Lucca, Italy, Gene Micheletti came to the United States at the age of 15.
Okay, can we get back to the task at hand? We're going to lose our Googleians.
No, they don't want to hear the history of Gene and Giorgetti,
no,
the oldest steakhouse in Chicago.
The whole reason I decided to say this is we just played Just What I Always Wanted, My Own Little Bunny Rabbit. I shall name him George. And as our anonymity soundbite.
Okay, one last thing, though. He came 15. He married Ida Passaglia in April of 1938. Though he spoke little to no English, he came here, where he encountered his future business partner, Alfredo Giorgetti Federici, who was working as a chef.
You just love these Italian names.
Ida's great. Yeah. So together in 1941, they founded Gene and Giorgetti.
I just thought Gino Giorgetti should be our new George and Georgette.
Mm-hmm. It could be. You're going to throw a lot of longtime listeners off by that, but...
Well, yeah, but we also have to get a soundbite re-recorded. We've got to get...
But is Giorgetti... Is that female? Is that a feminine? I mean, this is an Italian...
Okay, here's people who've eaten there.
Okay.
Not Al Capone, but Frank Sinatra,
ooh.
Bob Hope, oh. Lucille Ball... Russell Crowe,
oh,
Keanu Reeves, Vince Vaughn, and Will Ferrell.
And someday it'll say Jim Sonia.
And Jim Sonia.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, the Retirement and IRA Show.
Wow.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Anyway, so one of our listeners, because those who don't know, I will be in Chicago. When the hell am I going to be in Chicago?
I have no idea.
Somewhere in May.
This place looks sweet.
No, April. The end of April. The end of this month. Goodness. So I will be in Chicago. I fly in there on the 28th, and I will be meeting several people on Sunday the 29th, one of which will be a dinner meeting at this George and Giorgetti's.
Gene and Giorgetti.
Gene and Giorgetti's.
Is Giorgetti a guy or a girl?
It's a guy.
I thought
because
so.
Okay. It's a middle all name. Right. It's Alfredo
Giorgetti.
Federici.
Yeah. So I don't know. I guess it could be Gene and Giorgetti.
So Alfredo had the kitchen, and Gene was the front man.
Gene was the front man?
Mm-hmm. Okay. In the front of the house.
In the front.
Alfredo was the back of the house.
I would assume both founders have since passed.
They have.
Yeah.
Gene in 1989. However, their family continues the tradition to this day.
Excellent.
The daughter, Michelle, upon the death of Gene in 1989, took over with... husband Tony Durpetti.
Okay, so this is going to be a real Italian steak joint. So
for sure.
Without a doubt, this will be close to where Al Capone would have
been. And I think it's the oldest just steakhouse. We can just drop the whole modifier Italian. I believe this is the oldest currently running, still running from 1941, 75 years later.
Steakhouse?
77 years later now.
In Chicago. Okay.
In Chicago.
Can we get back to the task on hand or we're going to lose iTunians?
I haven't had lunch, so this is actually a nice conversation.
So now you're a little hungry.
I'm going to peruse the menu. I'll let you know if
for,
I see anything
for all our iTunians, how we got on the whole subject of this, I do a lot of traveling every year for retirement planning. So I will be at the Retirement Income Summit in Chicago the end of April. I will fly in Saturday night, April 28th. I will be meeting with people on Sunday, April 29th. I think most of Sunday is booked, but if somebody would like to still meet with me in the Chicago area, I will be there the night of Monday, April 30th. I will still be in Chicago. Or is that the Sunday? I always get confused here on what I'm doing. I want to give the right days. Yeah, that'll still be April 30th will be Monday. That evening, I'll be at the Retirement Income Summit all day, but we get out at 5 o'clock. So if anybody's in the Chicago area would still like to meet with me, we call it a coffee and a second opinion. We can meet at, if this George and Giorgetti's is pretty good, I can meander back over there or anywhere you want to meet, coffee somewhere. And sit, chat, get to know me, get to know a little bit about our firm, be happy to do that. And then a few weeks later, I will actually be in Philadelphia for my first of two, Ed's actually be three this year, Ed Slott meetings that I will be doing. And anyone in Chicago, by the way, if you can't meet with me, this time I will be in Chicago two more times this year, most likely. I will be flying out there for training on the federal retirement system, and I will be in Chicago for probably 3 days then. And then I will be flying out there for Ed Slott's summer Chicago meeting. This is an optional meeting we can do. I'll probably be going to that. So I'll be in Chicago a few more times to meet with anybody who wants to. But I will be in Philadelphia in May. I will be in Philadelphia probably the 16th, Wednesday the 16th of May will be open for meeting people in Philly. We do not have to talk about the Super Bowl. Thank you very much. We can just skip that terrible part of New England Patriots history. But we can talk about your retirement, IRAs, 401ks, anything, Social Security of that nature. Learn a little bit about our practice. Get to meet me if you're wondering what we're all about. So that'll be the 16th of May. Then I will be in Boston and New Bedford, Massachusetts. I'll be flying to Boston on Saturday the 19th. I will be attending the Red Sox game on Sunday the 20th at Fenway. But anytime in between there, we may be able to squeeze in a meeting. Or somewhere between the 21st and 23rd, I will be in New Bedford and Boston. So we may be able to meet with people who may want to chat with me then. And then I was going to be in Sitka, Alaska from the 4th to the 9th, but I don't know if I'm going to do that now. I haven't quite... I looked at the cost of flights into Sitka. They ain't cheap. And not only that, I really want to get another Chesapeake Bay Retriever since my last dog passed away. And in order to do that, I want to build a very, very big kennel for my dog before getting him. And I'm thinking I'd be better served putting that money into a dog kennel than trying to catch salmon this year, and maybe I'll go to Sitka next year. But I have to decide real soon if I'm going to go to Sitka or not. If it isn't this year, it'll be next year.
That's it. Sounds like you made up your decision already.
Well, it's just, you know, the problem with being a financial planner, you sit there and you crunch the numbers, and you're thinking, all right, I should really put this into the kennel instead.
What brings you more happiness?
Catching a salmon would be pretty damn sweet, but having a dog would be nicest too. I'm kind of missing coming home to no dog.
To a dog.
To a dog.
No, coming home to no dog. I'm missing it.
You're missing having a dog.
Yeah.
Because now when you go home, you have none.
I have no dog.
Got it.
That's what I said.
Okay.
Thick cut bacon with blue cheese dressing.
Mm.
What's that?
Appetizer at George and George.
Oh, my Lord, you're still looking at the menu.
And then one last comment. Please get this so you can describe what it is. They have garbage salad.
Garbage salad? Garbage.
My guess is it's a chopped salad with like all kinds of stuff in there, but there's no description, just garbage salad. Half size and entree size.
There is a classic plate in Rochester, New York, Western New York area called the garbage plate. It has nothing to do with the salad, though. It's really
this is garbage salad.
Can we get back to the task on hand, folks?
Yes.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. So
just giving you a few suggestions to consider when you go to Chicago.
Okay. So if anybody wants to meet with me during all those times, I'd be more than happy to. We do work with people throughout the United States, as you know. We just don't do a podcast answering people's questions. We actually meet with people who are planning for their retirement. So this just gives people throughout the United States a chance to actually meet me, put a voice to the face. I mean, face to the voice. And get to know us a little. So anyways, that set, if that is interest to anyone, visit our website, Jim Helps. That's jimhelps.com. And Laura in the office will tell you how to go ahead and make those meetings. Okay, so if you remember, Chris, because Justin had left to go do some more tax prep, it's busy season, you and I started chatting, and off the cuff, towards the end of the show, I mentioned a strategy one might want to do, and this particular listener, who I would put in the category almost as a friend now, he's been chatting with us for quite a while, and
I saw that response.
Oh, okay, yes. You saw that too. Mm-hmm. So I want to.
He missed the point. Yeah.
And I figured if this gentleman, who's a very smart man, and I've met him, and he understands, he's a do-it-yourselfer. And knows what he's doing when he does it himself. So I thought if I didn't explain it very well, that's why I'm bringing this up again. But I thought I would bring Justin in and you, well, you're always in, Chris, to get your opinion of what I was trying to say. And I don't want to downplay his approach to it as well, but kind of off the cuff, I mentioned, and I tried to make this clear, but apparently I didn't, that as part of a sound bucketing strategy, we call your investments bucket three. Okay, so I think I even referred to them on that podcast, Chris, as bucket three. Let me explain what bucketing is and how we use that. And Justin, please feel free to add in, because you do a lot of the bucketing planning as well. When you retire, and I say this all the time, investment management is not retirement planning. And if you use the same rules of accumulation of assets, but apply accumulation rules to decumulation or spending of assets, you're going to set yourself up for failure.
You might work out okay, but you're certainly exposing yourself to some risks that you might want to avoid.
Agreed.
I like my more harsh, it's failure. But that's why I have both of you in here.
Yes.
He's overly pessimistic, which is healthy.
I am a pessimist.
Worried about bad things that could happen sort of way.
People pay us to tell them what could go wrong.
And to provide them with advice to avoid things that might
Correct.
Go wrong.
Correct. Mm-hmm. I tend to be a pessimist. I freely admit that. That is a bias of mine. That's why I have these. And I wanted both of you here, all jokes aside, to be able to give me and feel comfortable to talk, maybe even disagree with the man who signs your paychecks in a way where you're not going to worry that the man who signs your paychecks would somehow in some petty way hold it against you.
Mm. That's healthy.
Yeah.
Right. Just if you feel like taking the side of this clearly wrong listener.
I don't know. He's pretty sharp. You just said how smart he was.
And take his side on things. The man who signs your paychecks is not going to hold it against either one of you two.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that.
Just want to put that out there.
I'll speak my mind.
I've never bit my tongue before, have I?
No.
Yeah.
You're a tough one. You give me a run for my money. But and so do you. But all jokes aside, that's what I like. Because we all don't fall victim to groupthink. But what I feel was misunderstood here is he didn't understand the context that I was recommending this.
Right.
So let me kind of back up, because I think this is an interesting topic. So in a distribution portfolio, folks, the whole idea is to protect yourself from sequential risk. That's what the industry calls it. Justin, you have a good definition of sequential risk. What is it?
Well, just like in plain man's terms, it's, imagine retiring at, the beginning of 2007, 2008, and then you lose 40% of your assets, but you're still spending the same amount out of those assets. That's the risk, is because you are debiting far more out of your portfolio way early on in your retirement than you ever anticipated to, which has detrimental consequences.
Absolutely.
Just through the bad luck, if you will, retiring right prior to severe market declines.
Yeah,
that's one of the worst things that could happen to you in retirement. If you have assets exposed to market movements, which most people do,
mm-hmm.
to retire and then start withdrawing money instead of filling up the bucket, you're now draining the bucket, trying to live on it, and have it drop tremendously in value because of something out of your control, market changes.
Absolutely. And the way Wade Fowl, who everyone on this radio show respects immensely, the way Wade explains it, in an accumulation, and Professor Fowl, he's a professor mm-hmm. of retirement,
doctor.
Essentially.
He's a CFA doctor. Yeah, yeah, he's got all those.
I mean, he's smart. The guy is not a dumb man. The way Wade explains it is in an accumulation portfolio where there is no cash flows moving into or out of the portfolio, there is no sequential risk.
No.
If you just bought and held with a lump sum, there is no sequential risk.
Correct.
But the minute you insert cash flows into an investment portfolio, whether it's cash flows in mm-hmm. or cash flows out, you are now exposed to sequential risk. However, on cash flows going in, down markets actually work to your benefit because you buy more shares at a lower price.
And that all leads into dollar cost averaging and
Correct.
Why it makes sense to invest slowly through paycheck reductions or just simply moving money into the markets, because the markets tend to be growing, so you tend to buy more shares over time.
But when you insert withdrawals from a portfolio, there's the cash flow item, so now sequential risk comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
But when markets are down, you're not buying more, Chris, at a lower price. You're doing what?
You're draining.
More at a lower price.
Right.
That's reverse dollar cost averaging.
Which is bad.
You have to sell more shares at a lower price to come up with the same cash flow needs that you had. And if, now that's Wade talking. Now we're coming back to Jim talking. So we as a firm recognize sequential risk. So we have two ways to manage sequential risk. First is to isolate, in our opinion, those expenses that you cannot cut. We call it as a firm your minimum dignity floor, a minimum level of expenses that you have to cover for the rest of your life. We help you in our process isolate that minimum dignity floor, project it for inflation, and get a look and feel for what that minimum dignity floor is going to be comprised of from retirement until passing. And then we believe as a firm to cover that with 100% guaranteed secure income. So we help you optimize your Social Security. We help you understand your pensions. And if you purchased an income annuity in the past, we're going to help you understand your income annuity. Because income annuity, Social Security, and pensions are the three main forms of secure income. This is income that is going to last for the rest of your life. Wade Fowl refers to those three items as risk pooling. He says you're taking some of the risk of funding your retirement and pooling it with millions of other people. Social Security is millions of people, as we know. Income annuities are sold in blocks of hundreds of thousands, if not millions. And pensions is hundreds of thousands, if not millions, depending on the company back in the pension. So he calls that risk pooling. Now, we believe as a firm to help battle sequential risk, your minimum dignity floor is covered with secure income. However, we believe your desired expenses, the expenses to cover the fun things in life, those can be covered with withdrawals from assets. Because if assets run out, and they very well could, if assets run out, you can cut a desired expense. Because a desired expense is an expense, if you don't cover, you will suffer an emotional hardship. I love to fish, and I want to go to Alaska fishing, but I might not this year, so I can get another Chesapeake Bay Retriever and also build a mother-of-all kennels. When you see the size of this kennel, this dog is going to have Kenville envy of all his doggy friends.
If you love dogs so much, why don't you let him live in the house with you?
He does, but during the day when I'm not there, I want him to have a big kennel to run around in.
Okay.
So a big part of my field I'm going to fence in so the little critter can run around and play. But what you have to understand is I don't have to go fishing. I can cut that. I will suffer an emotional loss, as I will this year if I don't go to Sitka fishing this year. But I do have to cover my property taxes, my groceries, my utilities. So now you listeners get an idea of the minimum dignity floor and the fun things. But the fun things we believe you can cover with withdrawals from assets. But if you start withdrawing from assets and the market is down, you could cut your fishing trip, Chris, to Alaska. But what if you don't want to? What if you say, you know, geez, I'm not going to live forever. This is my 60s. I'm still got the health. I really don't want to wait for the portfolio to come back. I got my minimum dignity floor taken care of. But now you're telling me, Jim, I really can't go fishing in Alaska. I've got to cut it because the markets are down. There's got to be a better way. And that's when we come in with bucketing, Justin.
Absolutely.
He's not used to me just handing this off. Talk about bucketing.
So the way, and honestly, I think the best way to start with is bucketing is defined by many different advisors and many different industries, and everybody has a different definition on how
or
we do it.
Or euphemism for it.
Yeah. So, you know, we personally use bucketing as a way to manage essentially your liquidity in retirement so that you don't have to tap into assets that are affected by a down market. So
Wade calls those, by the way, buffer assets.
Buffer assets. Okay, perfect.
That's what he called them today on the seminar.
So we bucket it in essentially three different categories. There is a fourth bucket that Jim likes to call out as a little coverall for everything. But bucket one is the first bucket, obviously, and that bucket is generally cash. Okay, so it doesn't have any real growth potential, and it also has absolutely no risk to it going down, and you have full access and liquidity at any point in time. How much cash should you have? You know, that depends on your personal opinion, how much other income you have, and things like that. But generally, we say maybe 1 to 3 years at max, I'd say. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, it's between 1 and 2, I'd say. With
most people choose 1 or 2.
Yeah. So that's the
1 or 2 years of spending.
Mm-hmm. Of spending.
On fun stuff and on minimum dignity floor stuff.
With loose definition, I'd say. Some people say fun stuff can stay invested, but generally we say, hey, if you want to keep having fun in the short term.
If you don't want to cut in a down market, you have the fun stuff in cash as well.
Yeah, so it's flexible in that sense. Bucket two is what we call principal protected assets. So in a down market, you can't lose, but it also gives you the opportunity to have some growth on it. And you might think of a CD in the past when they used to pay higher rates, which we haven't implemented in any way, shape, or form since I've been in the office because of how
they don't pay anything
low
right
rates
now.
Are. Yeah. But what I have seen them implemented on is oftentimes some sort of indexed annuity of sorts.
Flexible premium.
Or flexible premium annuity. The downside on those is, you know, you might tie up some of your money. You won't have quite full liquidity depending on how it's designed and what annuities you use, because there are ways around that. But it does offer some growth potential. And then bucket three, those are your market assets. Those are the assets that you add risk to. If you kind of break it down and think about it, it really is just a different approach, and I think a little bit of a simpler approach for people that are retired and maybe not wanting to think about this of asset allocation. That's, okay,
and you pointed that out in the past, Chris. Bucketing is just asset allocation.
It's kind of a structured way to look at building your portfolio of retirement resources.
Exactly.
Might be a way to say
instead
it,
of having it in one big account, mentally account for it. Why do we do it this way, folks? KISS. Keep it simple, stupid. And we mean stupid in a very affectionate way. Keep it simple, stupid. As you get older, you're not going to understand financial concepts. And Wade hammered that on the seminar. Not hammered it, but he pointed that out as another big issue people don't think of, cognitive abilities as they age.
Mm-hmm.
So the bucketing that Justin described, and the reason I like, and I actually like three separate buckets, three actual separate accounts, you will understand those as you age. You'll understand, this is my investment one. There's going to be risk there.
Right.
This is the principal protected one that isn't going to move. And this is my cash.
And I think it's pretty easy in that sense when it's like, hey, markets are down. I want to go on my vacation. Where do I take money from? Well, we'll take it from cash, or we'll take it from bucket two if they're available at that moment in time.
They will be, because bucket two, when we create it, will have liquidity.
Yes.
And that is something, if you have to understand, and Justin said the four-letter A word, annuity, which I get it. It's not quite four letters, but some people hate annuities. But he mentioned a flexible premium deferred annuity. We've talked about these on previous shows. I like those. And once the deferred period is over, it is a completely liquid account that you can hold for the rest of your life that generally pays more than bank CDs pay. But it's going to give you that principal protection. Today, that's what Wade was drilling home. He likes to use the term buffer asset.
Yeah, makes total
sense.
And
he says an asset that you can spend from when your investment pool is down. Because you don't want to sell from an investment portfolio that's down, reverse dollar cost averaging, as Chris pointed out, you're going to have to sell more shares when it's down, and it'll cause you to run out of money sooner than you might have projected. Now, he also pointed out many sound retirement plans have a disciplined strategy to sell principal every year. And we sometimes have to structure them that way. We have to spend this money down. But the idea is to move it from the bucket three investment pool, as Wade was saying again today, into your buffer asset, or what we call bucket two, or your cash asset, or what we call bucket one, when the market's up, Chris, not when the market's down. So Chris and I have been talking about risk capacity for a very long time. In our office, we strive that bucket one and bucket two will have between 8 and 12 years of your money that you're going to need in retirement. And a sound retirement plan, similar to what Justin puts together in this office, will give us a pretty good idea, adjusted for your income, how much you're going to need for the next 8, 10, 12 years in bucket one and bucket two. Which means it gives us bucket three. So back to our discussion last week, Chris. And that I explained all this today because I don't think our listener quite understood what I was getting at. I then said, once you have your bucket three established, and we know you don't need these assets.
In the short term.
In the short term.
Right.
Because we're covered for 8, 10, or 12 years with bucket one and two. Don't fear market corrections. Embrace them because they are full of opportunity. That's what we were talking about, market corrections. And I said, in reference to Natalie Choate, I said we could actually take a suggestion from Natalie Choate and kind of twist it around. And I said, base it kind of on the old Roth conversion annuities that the IRS shut down years ago. So we talked briefly about Natalie Choate's crazy, crazy example of how if you do an excess contribution to a IRA, you don't have to take out the earnings after October 15th of the year following the excess contribution. So if you put some money into a Roth IRA and you just knew this investment was going to go through the roof, and she gave various joking reasons of why you would know that. She said, and you put $100,000 in a Roth IRA, and you and I pointed out, Chris, you're not going to be able to do this. She was making an extreme example. No custodian is going to accept $100,000 as a Roth contribution. But if you put $100,000 in a Roth and that investment doubled, She said, just wait till October 15th of the year following. You'll have to pay a $6,000 penalty, 6% of the excess contribution. Then you remove the $100,000 and you get to leave the $100,000 again minus the $6,000 penalty inside your Roth.
So essentially you've paid a one-time air quote tax of $6,000 to now have $100,000 left in there
tax
penalty
free.
Yeah, into the future.
So extreme example.
So it was really a not an investing technique by any means, but rather a manipulation, a strategic manipulation, if you will, of
the tax
rules
code
on retirement accounts, on Roth IRAs, really.
So what I wanted to do, Justin, because you didn't attend this seminar, radio show last week, I said, let's take another extreme example like that and borrow it on the old Roth conversion annuities, which were a real thing. These were annuities that came out in 1998 when Roth IRAs came out. Actually, I think they came out in 99 or 2000. And by design, the minute you put money into these annuities, they dropped in value due to redemption fees, penalties, and costs. So you put $100,000 in, and instantly your account value might have been $30,000, just a massive drop. Mm-hmm. But the penalties and costs, Justin, magically disappeared 3 years into it, 5 years into it. So the idea was you put money into this annuity inside an IRA, you put $100,000 in, and boom, it immediately dropped to $30,000. And guess what you then did?
Yeah, convert. Right.
You convert. So you convert it to a Roth IRA and pay $30,000 in taxes, and then
well,
a year
pay taxes on
$30,000. Correct. Yeah. And then a year or two later, boom! It magically comes back to the $100,000 you put in.
So you now have $100,000 in a Roth, but you only paid income tax on $30,000. That's the summary of this.
If they never closed those annuities, Ken Fisher could not have his ad right now. I hate annuities, and so should you. Because people would be lining up today, Justin, to buy.
Yep.
Can I have one of those Roth conversion annuities?
Mm-hmm.
So the IRS closed those down for obvious reasons.
Yeah, it was a blatant manipulation trying to circumvent the rules.
But what I said was, what if, just like Natalie Choate knew in her example, this particular investment was going to go up 100% in hers, I said, what if you knew you didn't need your money because you had a good bucketing plan in place, so you have a lot of risk capacity, so you can feel comfortable knowing your portfolio fell. You have ample money in bucket one, ample money in bucket two, bucket four, which Justin said I also talk about, that's your lifetime secure income. Bucket four is more than enough to cover your minimum dignity floor. A well laid out plan, would you not agree?
Yes, absolutely.
So if you had that situation, why worry about markets? Why do all this investment management trying to figure out, should I buy this, buy that? You should have a very strong equity allocation in your bucket too, because as two very smart people sitting to my left and right, Chris and Justin, have said, bucketing is asset allocation. So if you have money in bucket one, which is safe assets, bucket two, which could be CDs, fixed annuities, bonds, not all bonds, folks, but certain types of ultra short-term bonds, you have a lot of fixed income and bond allocation. So you can have more, Justin, in equities than you might normally think your investment portfolio should have.
Completely agree.
So,
'cause your overall risk is still in that moderate range.
Absolutely.
Because you have everything else tying together.
In bucket one and two.
In bucket one and two.
And
exactly.
Bucket four, if one, two, and three ran out, is enough to cover your minimum dignity floor. Never forget that, folks. So when we can design that for someone, we try to encourage them to actually take on more risk than you might normally think, because you have to look at bucket one and two in totality. In all of three accounts together. So what I was saying is, if you knew A well-diversified aggressive investment, Justin, and I use the example of a technology ETF or exchange fund or a well-managed fund. Mm-hmm. But investing in one sector that by many measures is overvalued and will eventually correct, but will most likely, because it's well-diversified and a drop in the equity markets is just a reversion to the mean. It's actually a reversion past the mean. It will shoot below the mean, settle, and then recoup up. That's how investments work. If we know it's going to drop right now because it's so high and you do want to convert, why not put money in your bucket three that you know you're not going to need right away? I didn't say it all. Don't put it all in there. But you put some in there and the market drops. And I said, let's just say you put $100,000 in and it drops 50%. And I think you would agree, Justin, a tech fund has the ability to drop 50%.
Yes, I agree with that.
Okay, so now it drops 50%. And let's just say I gave the example, your $100,000 bought 1,000 shares of this mutual fund. Let's not get into dividend reinvestment or anything like that. You got 1,000 shares trading at $100. Now you suffer a 50% drop in the fund. And everybody usually says, oh, I'm down. I've lost. And I'll tell them, you haven't lost anything. You still got the same 1,000 shares.
Right. Yep.
What you lost is the value of those shares right now. But what if instead when it's down, you don't panic when it's up, you actually buy when it's up to ride it down, you can convert the same 1,000 shares at half the tax liability or less than half the tax liability, depending on how the taxes play out. You don't have to pay taxes on the full 100. You can pay taxes on 50. Now, that was borrowing a little bit from Natalie Choate's idea, and then it's not going to magically reappear a year or two or three later, guaranteed. But if the markets recover, the tech industry continues strong, if people continue using this thing called the internet and it continues to grow, your tech fund will eventually recover. So before you throw me under the bus, let me just finish, okay. And then I'm going to open the microphone to you two. I'm laying out what I was trying to talk about. So this gentleman sent me an email on that, and he said, Jim, I just finished listening to your 331 podcast, and I think you're being wrong-headed about things. And clearly he meant to say, I think you are a brilliant man, but I have another idea for you.
Mm-hmm.
But instead he worded it as wrong-headed.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was very gentle, actually.
And he went on to explain a few different scenarios. And his point was, under my scenario, your $100,000 loses 50%. And at the end of the day, you have now, he says, what if it recovered in 1 year, which would be a 50% drop 1 year and a 50% gain the following year.
Mm-hmm.
It would have to be 100% gain to recoup. You now have $100,000, he said, at the end of year two in your Roth IRA. He said, but what if instead you were being more holistic and paid attention to market valuations and moved some of the money? And he gave two scenarios. One scenario where you moved half the money to your high volatile stock holding and half the money to a low volatile stock holding. And the low volatile stock holding lost just 10%, while the high volatility stock holding lost 50%. He said, under your scenario, Jim, you would have the same $100,000 in a Roth IRA, but still have $44,000 in a traditional IRA. Because he said, one loses 50, the other loses 10. 1 year later, they're both back to even.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, what if you just panicked totally and you moved all your money to a low volatile that only lost 10% and dropped to 90,000, and then you converted 90,000 and it doubled. So what he said is you converted 90, then inside the Roth you sold and you bought the aggressive investment at the bottom perfectly, timed it exactly right, and then it doubled to 180. He said that would be the better out of all three to do. And before you throw me under the bus, I wrote back to him and I said, the problem is market timing does not work. And you are conveniently cherry-picking time periods that work brilliantly. But the fact of the matter is you're not going to be able to perfectly time every up and every down. I said, sure, on face value, if you could lose just 10% and then perfectly time the bottom. I said, but nobody knew on March 9th of 2009 that February 9th of 2009 that was the market bottom. Nobody. They were all predicting further drops in the stock market. So under that scenario, in hindsight, it sounds brilliant. Let's just time this. Move out of the aggressive, move into low volatile, move out of low volatile, move into the aggressive. I said, but if you don't need the money and I'm trying to get more shares converted than you, I said, my strategy could still work. And I would have to actually see real trades with real market timing to see how this really played out. That was my take. What do you guys think?
I have about 8 minutes, but I can opine on this. I see both arguments on both sides. However, I would say that converting at a convenient time is also market timing to some degree. Okay, so...
Potato, potato.
Right.
Tomato, tomato.
So I think your argument to him, but saying that converting at the right time is any different? No, that's kind of the same market timing. So I think he's got you on that one. I think if you want to isolate the argument down to one stock, it's a lot easier to understand, okay? But I think when you expand it into a little more of a holistic view, which he's saying, he's a little more accurate and it would be better because... You could take something that has dropped, right? Say it's dropped 15%, and then convert the same $50,000, but it's valued at $85,000 right now or something like that, right? So now you convert $50,000 into your high volatility stock, and you know whether it goes down or up, it's in the Roth, but hopefully it's going to recoup. But that stock was also down 50% at that point in time. So you're going to have a much stronger recoup.
I agree with that, but shouldn't we actually be crunching the numbers then to look net of taxes? Who has what?
No, because you're converting the same amount. So
no, I converted $50,000 or 100% of my shares.
I'm only converting $50,000 too, so the same tax bill, but I still have the excess left in the traditional IRA, and I have the ability to rebound in the Roth.
But I have twice as many shares in the Roth as you do.
No, I'm converting the same dollars and buying those
and
shares.
And buying the shares. Yep,
so I'm buying the same number of shares.
What are your thoughts?
It's two different types of market timing that you're predicting. It's more the one you could call tax timing, and the other is actually a purchase or sale timing of investments in the market. It's both a form of timing. Now, I would say that... The tax issue is timing the taxes is a little bit different than timing buying or selling a stock. Think of it this way. If you bought this imaginary investment that you're just in the back of your mind thinking, if it drops, then I'll convert it. But it might go up, right? You're going to ride it either way. It might go up. Now you might say, well, bummer, I'm going to pay more taxes, but yeah, that you're paying more taxes because you now have something that's a lot more valuable. If you're going to stand on the sidelines and whether it's fully standing on the sidelines or keeping some of your money in a low volatile or less risky asset waiting to pounce at the bottom to invest, I think that's a little bit trickier because if things go up, you've missed the boat.
Yes, if he put it all in his example.
If he's waiting for it to drop, but it goes up instead, he's out of that. He doesn't get any of that. Now, the good news is he doesn't have to pay taxes
on it. That would be his example three.
But he doesn't have it anyway.
That would be his example three where he put it all in the low volatile. His example two is 50-50, but I see what you're saying.
But the risk of putting it all in the low volatile is things go up.
Things keep going up.
They don't correct immediately. Right. You don't have this opportunity. And you've missed out on that because you're sitting in the low volatile or cash on the side.
And I think
where you're avoiding that by being invested, with the potential of it going up, just keeping in the back of your mind that you could possibly, it's almost like having an option on paying less taxes. If things drop, you'll be able to exercise that choice or option by, and I'm not talking about financial options necessarily.
Right.
I'm
right.
talking about just having the choice or option to do something if it benefits you. You might be wrong, but if you're wrong, it's because the stock's skyrocketed, and who's going to complain about that? You know, you're going to maybe say, shucks, you know, if things had gone down before they skyrocketed, I would have been able to do this tax thing, but you know what? I'm now a lot more wealthy because I have investments that are worth a lot more. So I think it's a little different perspective if you look at it like that than just kind of an either-or mm-hmm. timing issue.
Yeah, I like options thought, because it's a win-win no matter what happens. So the idea right. would be to keep it in risk, not low vol, because if it mm-hmm. goes up, you win because your IRA is worth a lot more. But if it goes down, you can make the choice, convert some or all or however much you can afford tax-wise, and then wait for that to go up.
Which is exactly what some people did in 2009-2010.
Mm-hmm.
They took advantage of that, knowing they didn't need the money right now because it was in effect bucket three, long-term money. They were confident it was going to eventually come back, so why not pull the trigger on the taxes at that point and then have tax-free growth from there?
I was going to say, the big takeaway before you finish, Justin, because I know you have to go, the big takeaway that I want listeners to get out of this, and I encourage, and again, this gentleman I like, I've met, I consider mm-hmm. him more of a friend than a listener, and he was ribbing me on wrongheaded. But the point is, you always should convert the most aggressive investments. Or don't convert an aggressive investment that dropped a lot, move it to a Roth, and then buy a low volatile investment.
No, that'd be the worst thing.
So just remember, whether you choose, and I guess I love what you said, Chris, that I'm really doing tax timing. And that's what I do. I'm not doing market timing. Buying and holding, you're just going to ride it up or ride it down. We're not trying to time the market here. But don't panic when it drops. The biggest thing we see is people panic, even with bucket three assets. They panic, and then they move from something that dropped a lot to something low volatile because they think it's just going to keep dropping. And then they might convert. And instead of keeping it in an aggressive investment, it's in a low vol investment, and it's not going to recoup tax-free.
Yeah, that's where I was going there. It's the behavioral aspect. So, you know, if you got to remember that you have your other buckets in place, that it is your full asset allocation, that you are not completely aggressive across the board. You can fall back on your income and your bucket one and two. And you don't need that money. That's the real big key.
And you don't have to cut your spending because your bucket one and two is taken care of. Your fund things for the next 8, 10 to 12 year period. Your bucket four, lifetime secure income, is already covering your minimum dignity floor. So when you have that all set, this is a strategy for retirees. I'm not talking pre-retirees. Pre-retirees, you don't worry about it. It's a buy and hold like we were just talking about, Chris. That's when you're just putting money in, you're holding it, and it's sitting there. So a conversion is just a tax timing opportunity. But I'm talking about retirees who freak out when the portfolio is down. And I get it, you freak out, because we can see here as industry people or academics, in the case of Chris, and say, okay, no big deal. Your portfolio's down, but you have the risk capacity. We're talking industry jargon there. The client is sitting there thinking, oh my God, I have $100,000 less I can spend. They're just freaking out because they think it's gone, they lost it. And we're just trying to get them to calm down and take that lemon and make lemonade out of it. All right, markets down. Markets go down. There's nothing wrong with it. It's an opportunity. And it's going to be an opportunity to convert, because a lot of retirees don't have an opportunity to buy, Justin, because they're no longer working and have the discretionary income to invest. So what we try to get them to do is convert, or tax timing, as you said. So I just found this an interesting approach that he took, and I wanted you guys to opine a little on what you thought the best way for people to handle conversions. The main takeaway, folks, we love conversions when done appropriately and make tax sense, But the best time to convert is in a down market. But if you get caught up in an up market, falling to a down market, don't panic. A sound bucketing strategy, keep holding the aggressive investments they lost, but now get them into a Roth at a 20, 30, 40, or 50% tax reduction.
Yeah, there's times when you have this tax window that opens up. You have a drop in asset values, which is a prime time to consider converting, or if you have a yearly dip in other income for some reason, then you also have an opportunity to convert at lower rates. So in one hand, there's converting a lower dollar amount of assets. On the other hand, the benefit could be converting at a lower rate. Don't miss those opportunities. They come up occasionally. If you let them pass you by, you get into the next year, you've missed it.
Yep.
Missed the opportunity to pay less tax. Who wants to do that?
Yep.
Not me.
Do you agree?
I completely agree.
Excellent. Great. Well, that's what I wanted to cover.
Perfect. So that music means we're at the end of another fine broadcast of the live podcast version of the Retirement and IRA Show. Jim, do you have any parting thoughts or comments? Or
no, but we are going to add the Colorado Show because we had some good Social Security mistakes.
Yeah, so hang on through the little announcement here at the end of the show. If you're interested in some Social Security scenarios where people ran into some friction, if you will, or some hurdles when they went to the Social Security office. We mentioned a couple of those examples and what you might do about it. That'll be tagged on to the end of the show here if you're interested. Otherwise,
see you next week.
Stick with us. We'll be back next week with a brand new podcast.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556. Rocky Mountain High, Colorado.
Rocky Mountain High, Colorado. Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show, Colorado edition. My name is Chris Stein. I'm here with Jim Saulnier as well. So we join you as we usually do every Saturday morning from 8 to 10 a.m. I'm sorry, 8 to
8 9. 8 to
9,
yes.
Now it's just
it's been about a year since we've had a one-hour show. Yeah.
So, yeah, my brain's a little behind, apparently.
A year behind?
And so today's show, we tend to, when we can, not always, but when we can, we put a bit of a Colorado spin on it. I guess we feel just more comfortable talking about Colorado-specific topics, although a lot of the topics on the show with regards to retirement planning aren't specific to Colorado, and we'll talk about those most of the time. But on this show, we feel a little more free to talk about Colorado-specific items. We have a couple of emails, I believe on Social Security issues, that have a bit of a Colorado connection, although Social Security rules aren't specifically state-driven rules. There's very little of the Social Security system that's affected by state rules. But I believe the people who contacted us do have a Colorado connection. So I guess this is in the vein of the, in the spirit, if you will, of the Colorado edition of the Retirement and IRA Show. What else? Oh, I guess that's all I have for an intro. What about you, Jim?
That was a very good intro. I thought you did a fine job.
Why, thank you. Do you have anything to say?
Not really. Just want to welcome our listeners in Northern Colorado and our iTunians and Androidians who may be listening off of iTunes. And we are finally on Google Play.
Oh, nice.
We had never been on Google Play. I didn't realize that.
I didn't really realize we weren't, but that's great, I guess.
Well, apparently you have to post on both. You might have one of those app things on your Android phone that could go to iTunes and pull one.
Right.
But it's not as prevalent
prevalent.
Prevalent. Mm-hmm. Than if you just listed the podcast on Google Play, then everyone on Google will find us. Because one thing we couldn't figure out, 90% of our listeners, maybe 95, no less than 90, are on iTunes. Mm-hmm. And we had very, very few Androidians. And then I was attending a seminar myself, and the person on the seminar said, "Mo, make sure you post your podcast on Google Play." To which I got a hold of Julia, who does all that, and said, "Hey, are we on Google Play?" And she says, "Why, no." And well, that explains why 95% of our listeners are iTunians and very few are Androidians. Because you figure Android platform is bigger than the Apple platform.
Yeah.
But
just thought maybe iTunes people were more interested in retirement.
Maybe they are. That could also be it. So anyways, I did get an email from Google on Sunday, said, "Congratulations, the Retirement and IRA show is now on Google Play." So this will probably be one of the first new post-Google Play recordings we're doing, because this show will probably be tacked on to the internet version of the Retirement and IRA show and play that way. But for our Northern Colorado listeners, listen this fine Saturday. In fact, I'm not quite sure if it's a fine Saturday. The long-term forecast had Friday being a little cool this week. Today is only Monday, the 9th. This isn't going to play till Saturday, the 14th. But Friday, the 13th, is supposed to be, for Colorado, cool at just in the high 40s.
And bad luck. Friday, the 13th.
Oh, Friday, the 13th. Yeah, there was a whole movie on how bad that luck that day
it's
is.
A bad day, apparently.
Yeah, especially if you like hockey.
Right.
So anyways, I do want to welcome my Northern Colorado listeners. This show kind of does have a Colorado tie to it. We've recently assisted a few people in Colorado deal with some Social Security matters, and we want to relay to you some of the things that they ran into, some of the problems they ran into. And I think that the big takeaway is just because you're originally told you can't do something, or just because something didn't work out the first time the way you thought it should work out, don't give up. And we'll give you updates, hopefully, on all two of the cases that we're going to review today, that hopefully these people didn't give up and kept at it. Because if you go into something knowing this is the rules, and this is going to be very, very true with one of the cases we're going to describe today, where this person went in and knew what they could do, and they were told, "You can't do that." And then they got back a hold of me and said, "I was told I can't do this." And then we got back a hold of them and said, "Yes, you can." And that they have to go in and ask for, what are they called again?
I'd ask for a manager first, but then specifically, if it's a complex issue, a technical specialist.
Technical specialist. I always forget that that verbiage you use, technical specialist. That's what Social Security calls the people in the office who actually know what they're doing.
Well, most of them know most of what they need to get their job done. But Social Security is complex. It's hopefully they're hiring more people, which means there's new people in the office, and sometimes they may not know everything perfectly. That's why it's powerful really needed, I guess, for you to know what you're trying to do and whether it's allowed before you go in. Because unfortunately, a lot of times you're told one thing when it's the opposite is actually true.
So why don't we explain to our listeners what we mean, and we'll go over a case of someone in Fort Collins and a case of somebody in Greeley. Want to do the Greeley one first or the Fort Collins one first?
We can flip a coin. I don't care.
Easy.
Both are great.
Pick a number between 1 and 2.
2.
2 is Greeley.
Okay, perfect. We're going in reverse alphabetical order.
That's what I figured we would do.
Perfect.
Okay, so this is, do we have that Dragnet soundbite?
We do have the Dragnet soundbite.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
I like that. We haven't played that one in a long time.
We haven't.
Because this is a real case of a
real
person.
Real people.
Real people. Mm-hmm. Real person. Okay, so I know you know this because I ran through it with you. Mm-hmm. And when I told you what Social Security said, you were very forward and forceful.
I used an expletive, I believe, which I will not use on the radio.
Okay, I was just going to make sure you didn't. Mm-hmm. And then you threw the Greeley Social Security office under the bus.
That's a little harsh.
You kind of did.
There's some fine folks there, but we hear more of these types of issues from that office than others.
True. So I'm going to lay out the scenario that this person is in, and this is hot off the presses. He just brought me up to date today, shortly before we started recording, that he's running into flack. So we will be sending him back to the Social Security office, asking to see that technical specialist and or a manager, because what we told him he can do, he can do. He was just told he can't do it. Mm. And that's wrong.
Correct.
So let's lay out the scenario. He is 67. His wife is 63. Neither are collecting Social Security. So he wanted to know what he should do for Social Security. So we helped him optimize his Social Security. We can't do everything for him. You know, they have to be a little bit proactive and do some things. So we explained to them what needs to be done to optimize, and we helped them through the optimization process. We can't file for them, Chris, or do anything. We just give them the information, and then they have to act on it. Mm-hmm. So he was born in March of 1951, he's 67 years old. Mm-hmm. She was born in April of 1954, she is 63 years old.
So both of them, just as a little quick sideline, have their full retirement age of 66.
They do. And he was grandfathered, not that it applies in this particular case, but he actually it does kind of apply. He was grandfathered in under the old rules because he was born before January 1st, 1954. She was not. She was born just a few months later, but she has not been grandfathered. But the husband has been grandfathered, folks, into old rules that were abolished in the fall of 2015, fall of 1915. That's going way back.
Way back. Yeah.
I'm reading the
way back machine.
a book on World War I right now. So I got 1915 in my head. But he has been grandfathered in, so he still has the ability to file what is known in the industry as a restricted application.
Right.
And this is key to this whole thing. If he was born in April of 1954 like his wife, he wouldn't be able to do what we suggested he consider doing.
Correct.
But being grandfathered means you can go by the old rules. And the old rules used to allow someone who was past their full retirement age. And Chris, you just pointed out again that these people have a full retirement age of
66 years old.
Age 66. Mm-hmm. Full retirement age, folks, is kind of the middle number you see on your Social Security statement. The first benefit they show you on your statement is what you would get if you claimed early at age 62. And that number is a factor of your primary insurance amount, called PIA for short, primary insurance amount. Your primary insurance amount is essentially your Social Security benefit at your full retirement age. And this person's full retirement age is 66.
Right.
And then if you delay your benefit past your full retirement age, every year you delay, you get 8% more Social Security. So if he delayed to age 70, he would get 8% per year for 4 years, which simple math shows you is about 32% more Social Security. So he could have just waited to claim, which is what he was thinking of doing.
Mm-hmm.
But when he shared with me that he was not sure if he should claim or not and what should he do, so we suggested an optimization. And the optimization showed, and you can probably see where this is going, Chris, because you haven't seen this particular case, but I ran through with you the response that the Greeley Social Security office told this person, and that's where the expletives and the things you said went flying. So what happened is in this optimization for this man, because he has been grandfathered in under the old rules and he can file a restricted application, I thought and told him what he may want to consider doing. And again, we can only provide information. People have to act on this on their own. And apparently he thought, okay, let's try this. So I said, one thing you may want to consider is have the wife file for her benefits now. Initial knee-jerk reaction was turn on the bigger benefit, his, right away to get a little extra money. And to get the optimized value, the thought was the wife files for her spousal benefits first, right now at age 63. Claims early, in other words, Chris. She'll end up receiving a reduced benefit of her own.
Well, let me correct something. You said she would claim a spousal benefit.
Oh, did I say that? No, her own retirement benefit.
Right. She wants to, the optimization showed, the original thought process was he was going to turn it on now, so they would start to have some Social Security coming in. His is the larger of the two benefits. Sometimes that makes sense. In this particular case, it looked more attractive to them to instead have her turn on her benefit now, her own benefit. Each of them had their own separate earned benefit. She turns her own on now at her age 63.
Correct.
One of the reasons why that made sense is because not only does it generate a benefit for her immediately, it also unlocks the door for him to claim a spousal benefit upon her record. Because he can file that restricted application, what that means in a nutshell is that you can apply for a specific benefit while leaving the other benefit untouched. That's what the restriction is. I want to restrict my application to one specific benefit to which I'm entitled. And in this case, he can file a restricted application claiming only his spousal benefit on her record because she has filed in our recommendation scenario here, leaving his own benefit to continue growing at 8% per year. It's already grown by 1 year from not claiming because he's 67 now. He could have claimed at 66, but he's gotten 8% increase for delaying it a year, and he can get 3 more years of those credits by leaving his benefit unclaimed. But in the meantime, we call it getting paid for waiting.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, he's collecting half of her full retirement age benefit.
And one thing I want to point, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but you just ended up saying it, but I'll put it in a way that our listeners will understand. Even though his wife, Chris, claimed early, he doesn't get half of her smaller Social Security benefit. He still gets half of her age 66 benefit.
Right.
That's what makes this even better. She claimed early, so her personal retirement benefit is smaller. But he's entitled to a spousal benefit, and he can file a restricted application, so he's going to restrict it to her benefit, her spouse, his spousal on her earnings, but it's not half of what she's receiving. It's half of her age 66 benefit. So he will get his full spousal even though she claimed early.
Correct. And this they can claim until ultimately he claims his own. And at that time, then he'll get the much larger benefit that he's allowed to grow. And I think in this scenario, he's planning to wait till 70. So he'll have gotten a 32% higher benefit than he would have gotten at age 66. He will have been collecting this much smaller, but at least something coming in during the years that he's waiting here. And she then, the wife, will be entitled or eligible to switch to a spousal benefit on his record if it helps her. If it hurts her, then she doesn't have to. She could stay with her benefit. I don't have the numbers, so I can't tell you how
it
that
will
would
be
work.
Bigger.
But then it will. She can switch to that at that
our,
time.
Our recommendation definitely was in 2021 when he turns his on, she will stop. Well, it can't say stop receiving hers. She's going to receive hers and the spousal offset,
right,
which those two combined will be bigger. Yes.
Perfect.
So
that's the plan.
On paper, it looked brilliant.
Yeah, and what you've described as far as when they were born, what he was grandfathered in to be able to do, her age now, everything you just described is completely allowed by the rules.
That's what I thought, too. And then a couple of minutes at 1:43 that today this email came in, and we start recording at 2:30. And I just let you read I read the email to you, and then the expletives flew. Now, remember, we're recording now.
The radio version is horse pucky.
Horse pucky, okay. Right. So he sends me an email, and I will read it to our listeners. He begins by saying, remember our plan at the last meeting was, and I'm not going to use their real names, we're going to call them George and Georgette, because as we always do, we protect the privacy of our listeners. So he says, the plan following our last meeting was for Georgette to file for her Social Security benefits now. Mm-hmm. Correct?
Yep.
Georgette being the wife.
Perfect.
Okay. Once that was completed, I would then file, the husband is writing this email to me, I would then file for spousal benefits and leave my own retirement benefits suspended until 70.
I want to
correct
one word
there.
It's his verbiage.
Yeah,
technically, it's not suspended. He's leaving his unclaimed.
Unclaimed, yes.
Suspension is a word we mean when we've claimed and then we want to pause those benefits. So just in case people are being very, you know, listening carefully.
Oh, no. I was going to point that out, too. But he wrote this. He's not a knowledgeable person on Social Security such as you. So this is his verbiage. I didn't want to edit it for clarity.
No problem.
Okay. The pushback from Social Security I received wasn't that I couldn't file for spousal benefits. Okay.
Good. So they didn't give them. Sometimes you do get pushback because the rule has changed and the person forgets about the grandfathering.
So they knew. I was ready to say that.
The good news is
they picked up on the grandfathering.
Yeah, no problem being able to do that. That's excellent.
And I warned him. I told him.
You might.
You were going to get pushback on that. That be careful when you go in there. If it's a new person, they're not going to know the rules too well. And they're trained right now that you can't file restricted applications anymore. So they're going to tell you, you can't do that. And he's saying, hey, I didn't get that pushback. Mm-hmm. That's what I warned him on. And when I was reading this email, I thought, oh, good, it's working.
Right.
And then I read the next sentence. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, huh, I think they're wrong, but I'm going to check with the grandmaster when you come in. Okay, so then he wrote, let's see, the pushback was like, okay. But instead, the pushback was that Georgette had to be at her full retirement age of 66 in order for me to do that.
Horse pucky.
It's he has to be at his full retirement age of 66. She does not.
Yeah, and for clarification, to do this specifically, first of all, to claim a spousal benefit, all you have to be, there's two criteria. You have to be at least 62, and your spouse who's filed, under which you're filing your spousal application, has to have filed themselves. Those two things must be true. So you can get a spousal benefit as low as age 62. What you cannot do at 62, up to your full retirement age, even before the grandfathering thing came in, is you are not allowed to file a restricted application prior to your full retirement age. But he's 67, a full year past his full retirement age. Not only can he file a spousal benefit, but he can do it in a restricted application setting like we're just dealing with now.
And
it has nothing to do with her age.
As long as she's filed.
So that's where the horse pucky comment comes in. That's just
But
wrong.
I can see, and I think you can see, where this Social Security employee made the mistake.
The mistake is
the age 66 requirement is for him.
Which he's met,
not for her. And the age 66 requirement was for him to file a restricted application. But for the wife, Georgette, She can file for her benefit at any time after age 62, and that unlocks the ability for the husband, George, in this situation, to file for a spousal benefit. And because he is past his full retirement age, he can file it as a restricted application because he's been grandfathered. So I think the Social Security employee got that part right, but then conflated the two and said, oh, gee, George, you have to be at, excuse me, oh, gee, Georgette, you have to be at 66 in order for your husband to do that. And that is just plain old wrong.
Correct. So they got it about 80% right. Unfortunately, that means they denied his ability to do this. So I guess
he's got to go
back.
In
that case, it's 100% wrong.
When
they got the rules about 80% correct.
But it led to a 100% mistake. So when we come back, we're going to tell you what we suggested this gentleman do and what he has to do at the Greeley, Colorado office. And then we're going to talk about an incident at the Fort Collins office that I think went far better than this. And then if we still have time, we got other things we'll talk about.
Perfect. So that music means we're at the end of our first segment here. We're going to take a short break. After this short break, we're going to come back and hear one of the top songs from 1935, as you hear on the radio. And 1935, of course, is the year that Social Security started, which is a perfect topic for this particular show as we're talking about Social Security issues. So when we come back, we'll hear one of the top songs from 1935.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Your sweet expression, the smile you gave me, the way you looked when we met, it's easy to remember, but so hard to forget.
Well, welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show, Colorado edition. And of course, is Bing Crosby singing It's Easy to Remember. It's the top song from 1935. It's actually written for and was performed for the, in the movie Mississippi. Came out in 1935 as well. So maybe not a perfectly recognizable song, but a perfectly recognizable voice for anybody who's heard any songs from the 1930s, of course, Bing Crosby, one of the most popular. So we look at that, of course, because Social Security started in August of 1935, as it was the Social Security Act was signed into law. And that's appropriate for this show because we are talking about Social Security issues. In the first segment, we had a person that we had chatted with previously who we had laid out some options for them, and they had chosen a particular strategy for claiming their Social Security benefits, had gone into their local Social Security office only to be told, sorry, you cannot do what you're asking to do. And we left it at that. So
we do. But before we get into what this person needs to do, I totally.
That's a lot of totally.
That's a lot of totals. Forgot to say to our listeners and to you, happy National Retirement Planning Week.
Oh, swell.
It's all week.
All week long?
All week long. I never even knew that. I just got an email today on it from the National Retirement Planning Coalition, founders and sponsors of National Retirement Planning Week.
I see. That's not on my calendar, but maybe it's taken a little to get some traction to get people.
I hear that during the week, employees should provide the employer of a retirement planning firm all sorts of gifts and accolades.
How about a cookie?
That would be a gift and an accolade.
I just happen to have a cookie here.
You do?
I do.
A cookie for me? That's a lot of cookies you have there.
Mm-hmm. Would you like M&M or chocolate chip?
M&M. Are they homemade?
Oh, you know what? They are mixed M&M and chocolate chip. So
So a little
Although
bit of both.
This one doesn't look like it has any M&Ms hardly at all.
I didn't realize I could get a cookie for National Retirement Planning Week. Who made these cookies?
I'm not sure.
Where did you get said cookies?
They were on my desk.
At school?
No, right here.
Oh, it's got to be Tina then. She's the only one who would do something like that. I was going to say, at school, I wouldn't be eating this. I'd be handing it back to you. Your students could have put poison in them for all I know.
Correct. No, No, that's it's very cautious of you. But these should be safe. These are supplied by someone you trust.
I would hope. That sounds like Tina in the office who would actually give you cookies.
But for
this
birthday.
It's for, I was going to say, those cookies were for your birthday, not National Retirement Planning Week.
No, but I've now passed it on. And now it's a cookie for National
I will
Retirement
say, all
week.
Jokes aside, when I got this email, all week they're doing seminars for retirement advisors. And that's why they sent me one of the emails. And I attended a retirement seminar today over the lunch hour by Wade Foe.
Mm-hmm.
Phenomenal. He is just...
It's Foe, but yes.
Foe, whatever. Mm-hmm. Just
He's good.
Really good. I took notes... captured screenshots. I mean, he was. I'm going to end up talking about his presentation. But what was great about it is a lot of what he was saying was supporting the whole model that we put together, our secure retirement income process.
It'd be very disheartening if he was saying that we shouldn't do what we're doing.
Yeah. But it wasn't. It was actually supporting. I mean, he wasn't singling us out by any stretch of the imagination. But he was telling us, look for this. Make sure you're talking about that. Make sure you do this. Here's the problem with that. Here's the problem with this. And a lot of his solutions and suggestions were ones that as a firm, doing this for the last 19 years, we have just evolved into. So it was really nice to see. I did want to wish you, though, a happy National Retirement Planning Week and let our listeners know it is National Retirement Planning Week. Not that I do any at all of this social media stuff, but if you, well, it's not a hashtag, it's an at. It says follow us on Twitter. Is that an at? I thought that was a hashtag.
It's at.
So what the hell
is
a hashtag?
Hashtag is when you're making a tweet about a certain topic. You do the hashtag, and then whenever people search that topic, everything with a hashtag of that same match comes up.
So it says follow us on Twitter with at, but not hashtag.
Correct. That's correct.
All right. If that makes sense to you, because I have no idea. But if you're on Twitter, I do want to give a shout-out to this National Retirement Planning Week, sponsored by the National Retirement Planning Coalition. I have no idea who the National Retirement Planning Coalition is. My gut tells me it's probably a bunch of insurance companies, but I don't know. But I will say the first seminar that I did with Wade Foe, or Foe?
Foe.
Wade Foe was phenomenal. Wade is just a leading mind and researcher on retirement income planning in our industry, and it was really good. But they said to follow him on Twitter at Retire on terms. You are. I think they mean your.
Retire on your terms, yeah.
Your terms. But retire, R-E-T-I-R-E, retire on, O-N, your, not spelled any other way except you are, terms, T-E-R-M-S. So I guess if you're on Twitter, you type that in and you're following what they're saying. Is that how it works?
Basically.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
By the way, the National Retirement Planning Week cookies are quite good. I just sampled one.
I saw you suck that down,
yeah,
yes.
Very nice.
Okay, so I wanted to pass that on to our listeners. Okay, back to the Social Security situation. So we had someone go into the Greeley office, told them what he wanted to do, and the Greeley office, in our opinion, gave him inaccurate information. What do you say, Chris, he now needs to do?
He needs to go back. Make another appointment.
To the Greeley office or a different office, you think?
That's his call. There's no requirement that you go into the office in your particular town. I actually know people who intentionally avoid the office in their own town because they have a lot lower wait times in another town that they don't mind traveling to. So whatever's most convenient. You may have some rapport with the local office, so maybe it wouldn't hurt to go back in there. Maybe, but they have notated your account, so it's not like the person you're speaking to has to remember your last conversation, and in all likelihood, they won't. Because between the last time you were in and this time, they've talked to hundreds of people, all talking about Social Security claiming, and it's all gotten jumbled up in their brains. So they're not, not to disappoint you, But they're likely not to remember you unless you made some kind of scene while you were in there. And if in that case, you might be banned from the office. But I would just go back in and see if they get the same answer. You may very well get someone who knows the correct rule. If they get the same feedback, just politely say, I've done some research and I think you're incorrect. Could you please check with a manager or technical specialist? And the technical specialist absolutely will know the correct rule in this particular case. I have confidence because someone to rise to that level in their office will know rules like this. I would be shocked, actually, if the technical specialist has an issue with this strategy of theirs. And that's just from anecdotal evidence. I cannot tell you that I've ever had, I take it back, I've had one time. One time when the technical specialist came back and still was giving incorrect information, to their credit, without going back, that technical specialist called the person proactively and said, I'm sorry, I looked into it a little more and you're absolutely right. You can do what you were asking. Please come back into the office. So I guess it's possible, but unlikely the technical specialist will have the same issue that this person has. And what they're trying to do is absolutely allowed. There's really nothing out there. We have enough of the information about the situation. Sometimes we don't have the full information, and I have to say, well, you know, based on what I know and assume, it should work. But in this case, everything that would prevent, there is nothing in their story that would prevent them from doing what they're trying to do. So head back on in. I'd go in face-to-face. Maybe you could solve it over the phone, but most likely it's going to be just as easy to go in face-to-face. They'll get it solved for you. Might have to call up the technical specialist to come out to the desk and clarify for the person, but I think you absolutely can do what you're trying to do here. So I guess that's good news we can relay to them when you have a chance to respond to their email, Jim.
Yeah, I will write back to them, get that all straightened out. You know, remember in the past when you used to be able to suspend your benefit at age 66, and file and suspend your own benefit, especially if you were a single person. File and suspend. Just go in, say, I want to file, and then immediately suspend. And people would say, well, why the heck would I want to do that? Now, you can't do this anymore, folks. You cannot. But in the past, Chris
well,
and
can
I...
Well, you can do the first part, what you
yes,
said.
You can file.
You can file and suspend.
You just can't get the benefit from it.
You can't do the second part you're about to
I'm
describe.
About to say. And what you could do is any time between 66, when you filed and suspended, and 70, you could waltz into the Social Security office and say, I changed my mind. Give me a lump sum check for all those months you never paid me. I want my benefit now. And that was good. We used to tell single people to do it all the time because single people cannot leave their benefit to anyone for the most part. If they're single but with young children, they might be able to leave some of the benefit to their kids or a disabled child or something like that. But if you're just like me, single, no wife at all, then
and no kids you know
no
of.
Kids that I know of, then no, I can't leave my benefit to anyone. Before they change the rule, you could file and suspend, and any time before 70, go in and get a lump sum payout. So if something happened between 66 and 70, Chris, and I had now a shorter life expectancy, and I realized I'm going to lose so much of my Social Security money, I could have waltzed in and got my money. Okay, that was perfectly allowed to do, legal to do. We sent people to the Greeley office to do this, and several times, two at least, but my memory, it's three. They were told, you can't do it, you can't do it, you can't do it. And later they'd have to go back, schedule another appointment, mm-hmm. prove to them again, ask for this technical specialist, and then they were allowed to do it.
Right.
So we're not picking it on Greeley office at all. They may have a hard time hiring people. And this person who made the mistake, I know they didn't do it vindictively. They really thought they were given the right advice. They just messed up a small little part of the rule and unfortunately gave erroneous advice. The biggest takeaway from this, listeners, those of you in Northern Colorado and those of you on iTunes throughout the United States, just because you're going into the Social Security office and that first person at the desk is telling you something does not mean it's right. Make sure you go into Social Security's office knowing the rules. Optimize your Social Security benefit. Know ahead of time what your claiming strategy is. That way, if you get any kickback, you can at least defend yourself and ask, I would like the manager or the technical specialist, please. Don't just take what that first person tells you.
Right.
They're not high man or woman on the totem pole. They might be new. They're still doing a tremendous amount of training. They're overworked, probably underpaid. And in this case, just mixed up two little nuances of the rule.
And this, the rules are so complicated, it's easy to do. So I'm not shocked this happened, and I'm not saying there's something wrong with the person who gave the advice. It's just they missed it. They missed the mark just a little bit, which caused them to give, you know, a denial effectively, say, no, sorry, you can't do that, when in fact the opposite is true.
Okay, so, excuse me, so the next case happened in Fort Collins, and the Fort Collins office didn't muff anything up. It just kind of surprised me that a big bureaucracy such as the Social Security Administration would use a rather simple narrative form where essentially they gave the guy a blank piece of paper. They said, here, fill in what you want to do, sign the back and give it back to us. We'll take care of it. So let me explain to our listeners what this case is. This was a gentleman who is claiming, or collecting right now, disability benefits. Now, when he reaches his full retirement age, his disability benefits effectively become his retirement benefits.
They don't effectively become. They actually become. Yeah. Your disability benefits shut off. They stop paying you out of that bucket, which is a separate bucket of disability insurance, and start paying you your retirement benefit. And that's because your disability benefit is essentially your retirement benefit as far as the amount goes. They're just paying it to you early because you're disabled. That's really all that's going on here. The dollars don't exactly match up perfectly to the penny like that, but it's so close as I think what I'm saying is accurate enough. So once you reach your full retirement age, they say, well, we don't have to be paying you out of this disability bucket anymore because you are owed a retirement benefit of the same amount. We're just going to start paying you that as if you had made it to your full retirement age and now you're claiming your retirement benefit. So that transition from your disability benefit to your retirement benefit happens automatically. You can't stop it. It just happens. And you may not notice it because the dollar amount's going to stay the same. So if you ignored all the paperwork that's warning you of this change that you're going to get from the Social Security Administration as you approach your full retirement age, you may really not notice an effective change because you're still going to get the same benefit effectively every single month put into your account.
So this gentleman was collecting his disability. He knew it was going to turn to his retirement benefit, and he had came into the office and had asked us, would he be allowed to suspend his benefit at that point and earn delayed retirement credits? Why don't you explain a little? The answer was yes, but why don't you explain a little bit about that strategy he was going to do?
So for a variety of reasons, people might want to do what he's asking, which is suspend his benefit after it's claimed. So in his case, you cannot stop the activation of your retirement benefit. That's going to happen automatically. But the moment that
happens, if I can interrupt, when he turns his full retirement age.
Right, right. Yep. Normally, if he wasn't collecting his disability benefit, if he hit his full retirement age and wanted to wait and earn delayed retirement credits, he could just not file for retirement benefits and just wait and wait up till age 70 if he wanted. But in this case, it's a little different because his retirement benefits are going to kick on automatically as they convert from disability benefits. So all he has, the only choice he has if he wants to earn delayed retirement credits is to push the pause button, what we call suspend your benefits, where Social Security will essentially hold your benefits for you and in exchange start granting you delayed retirement credits. And when you turn your benefit on later, you unpause them, you will start being paid with those delayed retirement credits factored in. Now, he doesn't explain here, or you haven't explained to me, nor is it matter for this conversation, why he may or may not want to do this, but that's what he wanted to do.
He wants the higher benefit at age 70.
The little side note I'll make is Back in the day, you used to be able to suspend your benefits like that, and any spousal or child benefits underneath your record could still continue to be paid while yours are suspended. That is gone. That's dead and gone at this point. If you hadn't already been doing that, too late. No grandfathering in. You can't do it now. So if he were to suspend his benefits, it will also suspend any other benefits on his record paid to other people, like a spouse or children. He doesn't mention that, but just as I just wanted to make clear that that rule has evolved in the past couple of years as well.
So fairly straightforward, folks. If you listen to what Chris said a few times, just if you're on iTunes or the Android platform, just keep hitting rewind, and you can listen to Chris explain that again. But nothing out of the ordinary here. We see this a lot. Very typical. So he decided, since he is paid on the third week of June, he would suspend his benefits July 1st, because he was worried, and I know you were going to research this, and I don't mean to throw you on the spot if you haven't researched it yet. If he suspended the third week of June, would he still be paid for June? Because the month of June will not be paid until July. Would he still get his month's benefit if he suspended immediately at his full retirement
age? When he makes the request, they ask him what's the effective date he wants it to be suspended. Now, he can't suspend until after June 23rd because that's his full retirement age. So suspending June 1st, not possible. Suspending July 1st, possible, which is what he wanted to do anyway.
But could he not suspend June 25th?
No.
So it has to be the 1st.
For the month.
Gotcha. Well, that explains it. Okay.
They don't prorate months.
They don't prorate
anything,
months.
Nothing I could find. Now, I'm going to leave this one out there that I couldn't find an explicit statement or rule, but I have found no evidence that they do.
Because what my concern was when I was counseling with him, I know if you die mid-month, you don't get paid for that month.
Correct.
So his rationality was, well, if I died on June 25th, I'm not going to get paid for June, or my estate won't get paid for June. So if I suspend on the 25th, I probably won't get paid for June. I might as well wait 5 more days.
He'll have to choose a suspension date that is the 1st of the month.
Gotcha.
He won't even be allowed to suspend as of the 25th.
So that will effectively pay him for the entire month.
Of June, he'll receive that the third week of July.
Yep.
And his July benefit, which is paid in August, won't be paid. It will be held because it's paused.
Gotcha. That all makes sense. Whereas death, you can't control. Okay, so long and the short of it is, he decided to make an appointment now because he wanted to do it 3 months ahead, and that's what Social Security recommends you do. So he went to the Social Security office, told them what they wanted to do, and this is what surprised him. And you can see I'm holding a note page up that he wrote to us, and he stapled it to a sample of this form. And if I was to describe this form, folks, it is a white sheet of 8.5 by 11 paper with a bunch of blank lines on it that says statement of claimant or other person. And Social Security pretty much said to him, write out what it is you want us to do, give it back, and we'll handle it.
Right. So they essentially
said...
Before you
explain what this form is, again, it's Statement of Claimant or Other Person, form number SSA-795. I was shocked by it because, again, it's a blank piece of paper. And you sign it. He was told just to do this and hand it in.
First of all... don't ever go looking for forms to fill out before you go into Social Security. It's kind of hard to get a lot of these forms, first of all. There's a few that are available for download, but for the most part, you're going to want to wait until they tell you what they want. I would say Murphy's Law would be whatever forms you pre-fill out trying to make their lives easier, they're going to ask for something else once you get in there. So don't worry about the title of the form or anything, but the point Jim's making is kind of weird that you just have this thing instead of a formal request to do what they're
wanting to do. I thought there'd be checkboxes and this.
But what he's trying to do is so, it's not unique, but it's not straightforward in such a way they could have a pre-designed form for it. So they have kind of a catch-all where they have a form that says exactly that. You write out what you want to do, and as long as it's allowed, we'll let you do it. So the nice part is you can write out in your own words what your intentions are, And so you don't have to try to use special language that they would understand or anything. You write it what you're trying to do in your own words. As long as it's allowed, they will handle the technical part of what it takes
and that's
to make
what,
it happen.
That's what he did. Mm-hmm. And they said, don't come in now. Do it 1 month before you want to suspend. So he's going to go back June 1st.
Starting up benefits from scratch, they want to have a lot more lead time because there's a bunch of things that have to be done to fire everything up. Pausing or suspending benefits or making other changes are a lot quicker. So
1 month before.
Yeah,
that's so all they wanted.
For that office, sounds right.
So, again, kudos to Fort Collins for apparently getting this right and being very simple and pithy. Blank sheet of paper. Here, fill it in. Tell us what you want to do and bring it back 1 month before. The Greeley office, you're doing great job. We understand it. You just gave a little bit of erroneous advice. Hopefully this Northern Colorado listener is going to be able to get it straightened out. So we do want to thank everyone. I know we're running short on time. If anyone out there within the sound of our voice in Northern Colorado needs help with Social Security, don't hesitate to reach out to us. Go to our website, Jim Helps, JimHelps.com, and we'll explain to you how we can help you with your Social Security questions.
Perfect. So we'll catch everybody next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit JimHelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.